Metro Theater Company has been producing shows for St. Louis audiences for more than four decades. Its goal has been to provide young and adult audiences with subject matter that, according to its own mission, stimulate curiosity and provoke thoughtful reflection. And so we come to the miraculous journey of Edward Tulane, Metro Theater Company's main stage production of the 2016-17 season. Joining me to talk about the production are Duane Hartford, the playwright, author of The Miraculous Journey of Edward Tulane. Julia Flood is Metro Theater Company's artistic director and the director of this production. By the way, the original music for this production was written by Julia's brother, Jay, an accomplished composer-instrumentalist. Thank you both so much for being here. Nice to have you.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Great to be here.
Well, Duane, let me start with you. Give us a brief, no spoilers, please, synopsis of what the Edward Tulane story is all about.
Sure. Well, first off, I'm not the author of the book. The book was written by the wonderful Kate DiCamillo. Yeah. So I had some great source material to start with.
Sure.
The story is the story of a China rabbit who's given to a little girl. And this China rabbit is quite full of himself. The little girl loves him very much, and he doesn't really understand what love is. He just is about himself and likes looking at himself in his reflection in the window. And things happen. He gets lost, and he gets passed from one person to another in this very strange journey that he has no control over. And throughout this, he starts to understand the meaning of love, the meaning of loss, and what it is to love and be loved, and what is home. And it's a beautiful journey. It's sad at times, and it's joyous at times, and it's just a lovely story.
I can understand, when I referred to you as author, I meant the playwright author as opposed to the author mm-hmm. of the book. But I'm interested in taking something, someone else's work that was written as a book and putting it into a stage play form. That's got to be somewhat complicated, or is it?
It is complicated. Yeah. Here is a story where the main character doesn't talk, doesn't move. In fact, it's very important that the protagonist of this story cannot move at all on his own. He's a China doll. Right. And so we have his thoughts, but everything else. So dramatically, to write a play where the protagonist cannot move, and mm-hmm. a play is supposed to be about action. And so that was a challenge. But it was an exciting one. As soon as I read the book, I was telling Julia on the ride over here, the last sentence of the book, which I won't give away, but when I finished that book and that sentence, I said, I have to do this, and that sentence is going in the play. So it was a challenge, but it's a different medium, so you think about what is the action, what's happening, what's going to drive the story visually and orally.
Yeah. Yeah. Julia, what are the challenges for you as the director of putting together this kind of a story?
Well, I think it's very similar to the challenges that Duane was talking about. I think one of the brilliant things that he's done in this adaptation is it's the story of the book, but it's also the story of how we tell each other stories. So it has this wonderful circular effect of being of the nature of storytelling. So I think all of us who have, or those of us who are lucky to grow up in a family where storytelling is important, whether it's reading a bedtime story to a child or passing family stories down through the generations, that act is such an active thing that connects us to our past, to our family, to our home, to our community. And so that's something I think Duane has captured very well that is in the book, but it's more so on stage. this whole idea of we're all part of this story. And the challenge is putting all those pieces together. Because as he said, Edward Tulane, which is the name of the rabbit, he goes on all these journeys, and they're from a garbage heap to the bottom of the ocean to, I won't tell you every place he goes, but he goes to a lot of places. He meets a lot of people. And that's a challenge on stage. It's so how much do you actually physically do, and how much do you leave to the imagination of the audience? It's been, we've had school shows this week with students, and going from really young, I think we had some kindergartners earlier in the week, through high school age, and the reactions throughout the play are so fascinating. What they laugh at, what they gasp about, and how that differs by age group. And so it's been an interesting journey. And music plays part of that. The way we do the lighting, the costuming, the way everybody changes from one character into another right in front of the audience is pretty interesting.
We'll talk about the music in a moment, but one of the things I'm interested in from your standpoint, from the director's standpoint, is staging a production like this to appeal to the very young audience and also to an adult audience. I mean, that has got, I thought that would be one of your challenges.
Yeah, well, you know, I find that if you approach the material from a very sincere place and try to really uncover the truth of it, adults and young people will respond to it. I don't think you need to change the way you play for it to play to young people. I do think sometimes a parent and a child might see this play together, and the child will be laughing and the adult might have a tear because they come with a different life experience. But this story is written to appeal to the child, but like all of Kate DiCamillo's books, and Dwayne has been very faithful to the book. I read her books not because I'm going to read it to a child, but because I love her books. The story appeals to me as well.
But Dwayne, that has to represent something of a challenge to you too, because you have to be mindful of your audience being this wide disparity in ages. So you have to be cognizant of that.
Absolutely. But as Julia says, I really do approach theater for young audiences with such respect for the audience. Young people are so aware. They're so willing to go on a journey with you. They know that they don't have all the answers. And so their lives are about learning. And I think as long as you're honest with them, as long as you're not talking down to them, as long as you're acknowledging their own personal journeys, you can talk about a wide range of subjects. They are, especially today in our world with mass media and social media, kids are hearing about a lot of stuff out there. And what I think the wonderful job of theater, and it has been for 3,000 years, is to tell stories and to share empathy.
But you don't get into double messaging, I guess. That is, lines that you know will play with the older group and those that will work for the kids.
I try to avoid that.
Yeah.
But certainly that happens when there's a play and there are adults characters on stage and child characters on stage. The children are going to relate to the child. The adults are going to relate to the adult. That just happens.
Yes. Invariably. Julia, let's talk about the music. Your brother has put all of this together. What are we talking about? What kind of music are we talking about?
Well, Dwayne wrote the play to have music as part of it. And I approached my brother partly because I've always admired his work, and he's worked primarily in TV and film, and we've never had a chance to work together on something. Our mother was an elementary music school teacher, and she also wrote plays for children to do in schools, and so it's something we grew up together doing, and only with this project did we come together to do this. What Duane has written, Jay and I both, in talking through it and reading the book and then reading the play, knew that this music had to be pretty much the soul of Edward. So it underpins the moments where he's learning. It underpins the pivotal moments in his journey. So it was interesting, though, because working with him on this, he's used to working on something where he's the last person to come in. So the whole movie or the play or whatever it is, he's also done some work on video games and things like that, it's all together except the music. So he came in asking me, well, how many seconds long is this moment going to be? And I said, yeah. I don't know. We haven't gone into rehearsal yet. So we both had to go, oh, wait a minute. So we were both coming at it from different points of view. And he came in for the very first rehearsals and was in the room with the actors. And that was so exciting for him because he's used to working alone in his studio, you know, writing the music and putting it together and watching a clip of a TV show or something. And so this was a whole different thing to have actors collaborating and saying, well, what if I played the recorder in this moment or what, you know, so that was really, really fun.
Are we talking instrumental music only or do we have music and lyrics?
No, it's instrumental music. It comes into the play at moments usually when something is major is happening. So there is action and speech happening, but the music is underpinning it.
Kind of like a soundtrack in a film.
A little bit that way.
We have some of that music that we listen to get a sense of what he's done and what it sounds like. Do you know what clip that we have? It's a guitar.
I'm not sure which clip. Once we hear it.
Well, let's have a listen to some of it and we'll go from there. That's very, very pretty. Not exactly upbeat, I suppose.
It's beautiful.
What's going on when this is being played?
There are several themes that come back in different places. And this one is at a moment when he's looking at the stars and looking at the constellations. And the stars come back over and over again on his journey. Part of the story of the book is about finding home and what does home mean. And one character says, as long as you can see the North Star, you'll never be truly lost. And this is one of those moments where he's looking at the North Star.
Who's playing the guitar, by the way? We should give credit where credit is due.
I believe that the clip you have is my brother playing. But in the play, we have two people that are playing. One is Pete Winfrey, the actor who plays Edward Tulane, the voice of Edward Tulane. I should say he doesn't play the rabbit. He plays the voice of the rabbit. Mm. And then the other musician we have is Roxanne McWilliams, who is an actor who plays multiple instruments.
And they're visible on stage playing some. Duane, why did you feel it necessary to have music? I mean, this was your idea.
So I wrote the play with the idea of just four or five actors on stage playing all these different roles. I had this idea that Edward, because he can't move, there would be an actor assigned to him. And he doesn't touch the Edward doll ever. He's just there. He's kind of the spirit, the mind of Edward that we see a visualization of. And in the development of the play, music just kept coming into my head. It's just like, this is part of who he is, his soul. And so this idea that Edward's voice is a musician that's just there with his guitar. And when an emotional moment happens, when there's learning something, that he just starts playing. And sometimes he's talking as he's playing. It just, it, it kind of happened throughout the workshop process developing the play.
That's what creativity is all about,
that's
right? Coming
about.
Up with things like this. A very interesting device. Julia, tell me about the cast.
The cast is five performers.
I should point out, it's a relatively short play. It's about 70 minutes,
yes.
I understand it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then we usually do a question and answer period after the play because young people and adults have a lot of questions, mm-hmm. especially given the nature of this play and the way, well, I don't want to give too much away, but yes, 70 minutes long. The cast is Pete Winfrey, who plays the musician, is the name of the character, and the musician plays this music and is the voice of Edward Tulane. Then we have a character named the Traveler, and that's Erin Renee Roberts. And she has the job of playing a lot of characters, including the grandmother of the little girl who gives the rabbit, and various people throughout the play. We have Adam Flores, who is, he's actually a professor at Fontbonne, and he is playing the man, so he plays multiple roles, everything from an eight-year-old boy to an old fisherman. And then the woman is Bridget Bassa, and she plays everything from a four-year-old girl through an old woman. Then Roxanne McWilliams, who is the player, and she primarily has a musical role in this production.
We're going to be putting the schedule of the performances on our website and a link to your website as
great.
Well. But one of the things that occurred to me in getting ready to chat with you guys is how difficult it must be for the actors, because you're playing basically on weekends with 4 or 5 days in between performances.
Mm-hmm.
How difficult is that on actors to kind of go into their hiatus for 4 or 5 days between performances?
Yeah, well, you would think that they're going into a hiatus, but we actually are doing school shows every day, Monday through Friday. Yeah. So they really are only having one day off a week.
Okay,
so we do a show in the morning and then a show at night.
Well, we'll have all of this information on our website. I want to
great.
Thank you both. The Miraculous Journey of Edward Tulane is showing on select dates through December at the Missouri History Museum's Lee Auditorium. It premieres tonight at 7 o'clock. I want to thank you so much, Julia Flood. Great to see you. Dwayne
thank
Hartford,
you.
Congratulations. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.